It's Window Nation's semi-annual sale, and it's a big deal. Right now, get 50% off all windows along with no interest for 5 years plus bonus savings when you schedule a consult today. If your windows leak, get foggy or hot, or you're paying high utility bills, that's a big deal. With Window Nation's semi-annual sale, you can replace your windows and save a big deal too. Schedule a no-obligation in-home estimate now. Call 866-90-NATION or visit windownation.com.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You're listening to the Go Birds Pod, a radio.com podcast about your beloved birds.
Oh, what's going on, Philadelphia? There is rumors down at the owners' meeting. Not really, but there are some that we need to get to. Doug and the rest of the organization really praising Carson Wentz. We get to know why he is, or needs to be, I should say, a better teammate. It's John Barchett along with Elliot Shore Parks down in Phoenix, Arizona, where if you find him down there, he will not be carrying a wallet in his pocket. He's staying true to his take there. I still think that's the weirdest thing ever, but we love him nonetheless. Elliot, what's going on, man? How are you?
I just don't get why you would want a wallet in your pocket. Like, it's uncomfortable. It sticks out. Like, I feel like just either have your girlfriend hold it, and if she's not there, you just got to bite the bullet and hold it as you walk around.
You have your girlfriend hold it. Unbelievable. Unbelievable take from Elliot Shore Parks. But, yeah, man, I mean, well, first of all, what's your biggest impressions down there? We'll get to Eagle stuff, but just league-wide things. Like, what's the biggest thing you notice at owners' meetings? Just a lot of Bloody Mary drinking or a lot of, you know, the harsh discussions going on about the rule book or whatever? Or what's happening down there?
So I would say my biggest takeaway, and I've certainly been critical of Howie in the past, so this isn't just, you know, joining Eagles Twitter and praising everything Howie does, but my biggest takeaway is Eagles fans should feel very lucky that they have the trio of Doug, Howie, and Larry running this show, because you look around at some of the other decision makers around the league and like some of the other head coaches, and there's just not a lot of talented guys running teams. I mean, like, you look like there's some young up-and-coming people, there's obviously some established people. But when you listen to Howie talk and you listen to Lurie talk, and then Doug to a certain degree, although he talks about, you know, different kinds of things, but when you listen to the way Howie and Jeffrey talk about the way they make decisions and how they allocate resources and just the levels of thought that goes into every decision, it's extremely impressive. And that's the feeling you get when you talk to people around the league at events like this, that the Eagles are in many ways like viewed as one of the more impressive front offices. And I think that starts with Lurie because of his mindset, but also obviously Howie deserves credit. But again, like, you know, you see Dave Gettleman walking around and you see like guys like that, and you're like, man, like, if the Eagles fans should feel very happy that, you know, when it comes to league-wide decision makers and stuff like that, that they have this trio kind of running the show.
And I don't think Gettleman even addressed the local beat reporters down there either.
No.
He just went on the NFL Network, I think, today and didn't even talk to the press there. So tells you a lot about, well, again, that organization, and I think you hit the nail on the head. I mean, there is a lot of dumb things that are going on, and even just listening to, you know, like the Arizona Cardinals press conference and, you know, and Cliff being there and everybody's making a big story about the stupid cell phone breaks and all that. It's just that it's maddening, and you don't have that with the Eagles. Everything was, you know, clear and concise. And let's start with Doug, because he gave you an hour yesterday, and I thought, you know, a lot of people said it was boring and whatever, but I actually thought he gave you a lot of good tidbits throughout kind of the conversation there. And the biggest takeaway, everybody that was, you know, mentioning it, is just like he got into this thing about, you know, Carson, how does Carson being should be a better teammate. I think Sal Pal was the one that was asking the question. Yeah. And he basically came in and said,
well, first of all, I think everybody can be a better teammate. I can be a better coach to the team. You know, I think being a better teammate would just be, you know, being maybe a little more, sometimes being a little more vulnerable. You know, be a little more accessible. You know, you're obviously committed to your craft and developing your skill, but you know, it's like you want to walk across the aisle and talk to the other side, and that's all part of a maturation process and a growth process, and you know, it's something that you learn through time.
I interpreted all of that of Carson was rehabbing, focusing on getting back on the field, wanted to make sure that he was, you know, ready to rock and roll week three, week four, whatever, and that took away from connecting with teammates. And you know, I always hate going back to that Philly Voice article, but that's probably why some of those things end up coming out. What did you make of those comments, Elliot?
Well, the Philly Voice article is definitely why all this is coming out.
Yeah,
right. I mean, if that article is never written, we'd never talk about it.
Right.
unless it's written somewhere else or something like that. So that's the whole reason it's being asked. But I will say, I thought Doug's answer was extremely revealing. I thought, you know, using words like vulnerable and like needs to be more approachable might sound kind of like soft insults. You know, like I think like if me or you or anybody was talking about a friend and said, I wish they were just a little more approachable, I don't think anyone would be like, oh, wow, he really came at him. But I think when you talk about how coaches talk about their players at press conferences, you very rarely hear them bring up like an actual character flaw, and maybe that's too strong of a word for what Doug was talking about, but you don't really hear them say anything negative at all, right? And I think so him coming out and saying Carson needs to be more approachable, and that I thought it was extremely telling, and I think there's probably more to that. So I think if you're an Eagles fan, like, I'm not saying the Philly Voice article has been completely vindicated. I think that Doug didn't speak about Carson to kind of maybe the length the Philly Voice article went, but it's, you know, that article was ripped at the time, and I think a lot of it has proven to be some level of true. And I asked Doug after Sal Pal did, because you're right, when you initially heard Doug, it sounded like, okay, this was a last year issue, right? He was rehabbing, he missed all the off season, all that stuff, right? So I asked Doug, I said, well, is this something you just saw last year, or is this been something that just kind of who Carson is, right? And Doug kind of said a little bit of both. So I think it's partially just who Carson is. I think he needs to maybe come out of his shell a little bit, or at least Doug seems to think that. And especially when you compare him to a guy like Nick, who's just so comfortable in his own skin, who's so used to like being in that role. I mean, I know he's never been the guy, but you know, he went to Michigan State, he went to Arizona. These are big time programs. Like, he's been on Sports Illustrated before. He's very comfortable in this kind of all attention being on him, let me lead role. And the more you're around Carson, and I think when you listen to what Doug says, I'm not 100% sure the Eagles feel he's like done it yet. I think they believe he has it in him, but I don't know if they think he's stepped completely into like, I'm the leader of this whole locker room guy.
I think it is. My first reaction was he needs to be 28 years old. And honestly, Nick came into my mind at the same time, too, because that's an excellent point you made about Foles being comfortable in his own skin, but he wasn't for a long time because of all the different mm-hmm. situations that he was in. And that was he just needs to mature. Like, he needs to get, just like you said, not only get out of his shell, but just be. I think we don't give enough credit to how shy he actually is and how, you know, non-vulnerable he is and how many shields that he does have up because of all those different things. And look, for him, this has been a lot of life-changing stuff too. Not only that, you went from NDSU, which people had to look up, and then you kind of put them on the map. You were the second overall pick in the NFL. You were ranked the third best player amongst your peers, however you want to look at that with the NFL, you know, 100. I know it's kind of bullshit anyway, but then there's that. Then it's like, boom, in 2 years you're an MVP candidate, and now, wow, oh, your team won the Super Bowl. All the things we've talked about. Now you won the Super Bowl, now you're injured again, da-da-da-da-da, and you're focusing probably and going back on, like, I got to deal with this pain of myself. I don't want that to pour out into the locker room. I'm just going to focus on me and whatever. I know that's a lot to, like, dig into one comment, but I just kind of relate it to everybody's life and to Elliot's life and to everybody else's. If you're struggling, and just remember when you were 24, were you that open? Were you that vulnerable? Were you, you know, and that just takes a while. It sucks.
I mean, like, forget 24. Like, I'm 31. You know, you're around the same age as me. Like,
I appreciate that. I appreciate that. I'm 35, but I appreciate that. Yeah.
Right, right. But no, I mean, look, on a much, much smaller scale, right? Like, everyone, honestly, everyone on Twitter in general deals with it, especially in the Eagles Twitter community. But, you know, like, my mentions could be particularly ugly. I know yours can't. And yes, am I comparing this to what Carson's going through? No, it's not apples to apples. But the point I'm making is, when you're someone that has criticism it thrown in your face, right? It's just hard to deal with. And I think your point about coming, you know, going from such a small pond to coming to Philadelphia, I think it has probably been a little harder on Carson than we maybe anybody wanted to realize. Because, again, I always think back to, I remember listening to Dave Spadaro. He was on WIP, I forget with who. And he said, Carson is already one of the top five Eagles of all time. And this was during the 2017 season. Now, we can argue if that's correct or whatever, but it just speaks to how he was viewed at that point. So he had so much success early on, he almost didn't really need to, like, come in here and change and figure out what works and figure out what doesn't, because he had such instant success. And I think this last year and a half has maybe made the Eagles to a certain degree internally, and I would hope him and probably some of his teammates step back and say, okay, Carson, like, you're not 31. You haven't been in the league 8 years. This is going to be your fourth year. Last year he was entering his third year. Like, you don't know it all quite yet. Like, take a step back. And, you know, when you hear the word mature, I think sometimes people view that as a negative thing, and in certain connotations it can be, especially with certain players. I think with Carson there is a negative component to it, but the mature part of him is not, like, showing up to meetings on time, handling his money better, like, who he hangs out with. Like, that's not the maturing he has to do. I think when he says vulnerable and approachable, it's just kind of growing into your own skin. So, again, I think it was criticism from Doug, but I don't think it was, you know, the type of criticism where you're like, oh my God, like, Doug really came at him.
And the only way that I can relate to Carson in a lot of different ways, as many of you know, maybe, and Elliot certainly knows, like, I was born in Iowa. We moved to Philadelphia when I was in grade school, and talk about culture shock. You know, like, you go from, hey, this is just, and the same thing. I was the star athlete on my baseball team. I get here, there's seven guys in front of me, and they're all the same as me. And you're in that. And not only that, your first day of school, when you walk in and you go, can I get a pop? And everybody looks at you like you're an idiot because they don't know what pop is. And they go, oh, it's soda around here, you dumbass.
Well,
and
that is a dumb phrase.
It is.
Not to bully you still, but that is.
No, it is. And I eliminated it from, like, the day one since we moved, you know, out here with my family and everything. And that's a big difference. And then, Jesus, going back the other way is an even culture shock too, because you realize, like, the major differences of that. And Carson doesn't live in the city, or at least I'm not. He lives somewhere out in New Jersey, I'm assuming, somewhere with, you know, big land. And he was been hanging out with the offensive line and all that. It made me just go, like, we go back and forth so much on Carson, the football player, and we do this a lot because we're in the middle of the draft process too. Everybody's just a commodity, and you know what grade you are, and all that stuff. We get caught up in it, and everybody does, so we're all part of it. But that just made me step back for a moment and just be like, let's just look at the human element of this, and that's really why a lot of this stuff kind of came out in the first place, and probably people had a wrong interpretation of who Carson is as a person. It's like, oh, he's putting himself on a pedestal and whatever, when really he's probably just a lot more private than we give him credit for, a lot more shy than we give him credit for, and he just needs to be in the NFL and experience that a little more too. I also thought that Doug's big takeaway from that presser, and maybe you can clarify this for me too before I get into that, was I remember him talking about the young wide receiver group, and he's excited about it. He said something along the lines of, when Mac Hollins is 100%, you know, was that like he's still not ready, or he's going to be 100% this year, and that's exciting because he can just step right into OTAs?
So my interpretation of it was, when you were, like, talking about kind of, like, going forward, Mac Hollins will be 100% healthy. I didn't take away from it, Mac is still not 100%.
Okay, I
mean,
I did
might
initially.
That might be the case, but I think he meant it more as, when you're talking about the receivers going forward, Hollins would be he will now be 100%, which he was not last year.
All right. Somebody on Twitter corrected that for me, so thank you to them for doing that as well. If you say that's how it goes, then that makes me a lot less worried about my Mac Hollins takes. That's mainly why I was concerned about it. But,
yeah, well, I got news for you. Your Mac Hollins takes are gone anyway. So whether he's 100% or not, I don't think that's really going to matter. But, yeah.
He did mention the corners, though, and I know this is the thing that we're going to fight about forever, especially when it gets in July and training camp. Like, I'm still the most excited for the battle that is about to happen. But when asked about Maddox, he listed slot corner first and definitely mentioned LeBlanc being in there, too, in that mix between them. He also said, I could see him on the outside and getting in the mix there as well. Did not mention Sidney Jones in the slot position, which to me is a very good thing. And then secondly, the last thing off of his tongue was, and maybe we can find a fit at him at safety if he needs to be there too. But to me, I think Maddox is your starting nickel, but I think he's in the mix to also start in the outside because, again, Darby's up in the air in terms of when he's going to be able to go. Jalen Mills is a little bit up in the air in terms of how fast he's going to be able to go and get in there. What was your impression of the corner talk when chatting with Doug yesterday?
My biggest takeaway was they're very high on LeBlanc. I think he is going to be on the field in some way. Now, I think the cornerback they probably like the most is Maddox. So if they view him as a nickel, that obviously hurts LeBlanc. But I think they like both so much they'll figure out a way to get both on the field. It really wouldn't surprise me, and I don't even know honestly what to call this role because they didn't really have one last year other than Malcolm, and he's not going to take Malcolm's spot. But just maybe like moving Maddox all around. Like, you know, he'll play like 800, 900 snaps next year, and they'll be pretty evenly dispersed between a lot of roles. I could picture Maddox doing that. Or maybe they just put him in nickel, but then you can't get LeBlanc on the field. So that was one of my biggest takeaways, that they're so high on those two. But again, and I know you might want to close your ears, John, but I do not think it was a good hour for Sidney Jones with Doug talk. Like, did not come away like, yes, we're excited for Sidney. I think when, you know, again, Doug talks for an hour. He says a lot of things. It's hard to take, like, the wording of everything he says. You know, he's allowed some slip-ups, right? But I do think there's a little bit of a Freudian aspect of when you're naming players, you name them in the order that you view them in your head. And I think when you talk about positions, battles, and all that, just Sidney really didn't seem to come up very much.
The tier of young guy that has a lot to prove, right? Something like that? Yeah.
Right, which is not good. I know he's going in his third year, and really, look, we don't have to get into a Sidney debate, but I just think it's going to be a really, really, going to be a huge, huge offseason for Sidney, and I don't know if they would trade him just because you did invest that second-round pick in him. I mean, maybe if you can get, I don't know, a low third, you kind of say, like, okay, we'll just cut our losses, but I think Sidney, again, he's lucky Darby and Mills are hurt. Because if they weren't, I don't even just see a role for him. So I think the injuries are going to help Sidney. But again, it's going to be a huge off season for him in training camp. I mean, they're not going to cut him, but you could really see Sidney become a guy like that just doesn't play.
I know it's really early. We haven't even gone through the draft, and we're just thinking about first practices that are going to happen in May here, but what do you think is going to be the starting lineup in that secondary, at least for the corners? Like, what are you feeling right now? I've seen a lot of people say, like, hey, Darby's, our good friend Stephen Lee thinks that, you know, Darby's a lock on the outside. I think the only lock on the outside is Jalen Mills. Obviously, with health involved there, sure, that might change, but I don't think Jalen is losing his spot. What do you make of CB2?
So are we talking about what do I think the cornerbacks will look like if everyone's healthy, or what they will look like when they first start OTAs?
Let's do one of both. When you first start OTAs, what do you think is going to happen?
So when you first start OTAs, I don't think Darby or Mills will be out there.
Correct.
So then I would say Maddox on the outside, LeBlanc at nickel, and Rasul Douglas on the other spot.
Yeah, I think him and Sidney will be there kind of battling that out. Yeah.
I don't know who they'll give the edge to. I mean, they continually disrespect Rasul, so I would probably say Sidney. But, I mean, I think Rasul is clear. I mean, I know you're going to disagree with this, but I know think Rasul has clearly been the better player. So I would think he would deserve to be out there more. But it'll be one of those two. And then, I mean, what do you seems like you agree, or what do you think?
Yeah, I don't really disagree with that. It's just, you know, it's hard to say anything else, and the team views it that way. It's Sydney needs the show. You know, like as much as I'm still rooting for him and I think that he's got all the talent in the world, honestly, him being on the outside is probably the best thing that could happen to him. And the fact that Maddox and LeBlanc did come along is a good thing. I mean, they started Sidney Jones in the nickel because he's unproven, right? And it was his first year coming off the injury, and you already have two guys that are starting on the outside, which, yeah, that could say something too. I mean, like, he really didn't put any pressure on those two guys, but they kept him in the nickel primarily that was there. If he's fighting with Rasul and Darby and Mills, I think that is the best thing for him to do. Again, it's I know the everybody has that kind of Washington U curse that's going on with Markel Fultz, and they got all these guys that are mixed in here and whatever, but I really think that him being able to use the boundary line is something that is very comfortable for him. I think him just being in the nickel spot and learning it and picking up, I know I'm probably on the island with this one too, but picking it up as fast as he did and still play pretty well the first half of the season, then the injuries and everything else, and then played bad on top of that. It's hard. Like, it is really hard. That's why I look at Avante Maddox and just say, my God. And they are, I don't know if you notice this too, but the Philadelphia Eagles Twitter account, anytime that Avante Maddox comes up, whether it's PFF or some other stat about him in coverage, they are sure to retweet that. Granted, yep. I mean, like, it is, you would be doing that too because it's during the playoffs and you want to promote that anyway, but I think that says something as well. And I really do think that at the end of the day, he will be a starting corner. And forget Darby, forget Rasul, forget Sidney Jones. I mean, you found him in the fourth round. He's played outstanding, and he's got still a bigger ceiling to grow. You can put him anywhere, but again, like I've always been saying, I just need him on the field at all times. And who knows? Maybe I'll be convinced that LeBlanc wasn't a flash in the pan, and then all of a sudden, you know, you have an amazing secondary here. But July, what do you think is going to happen?
So one quick thing. The vibe I get is that the team is not very happy with Sidney. So I'm not sure that they're going to handle
it. Yeah, I get that too.
Like, right. When you talk about Rasul versus Sidney, like, just the business side would say, well, Sidney is going to get that, right? I mean, he was a second round pick. You know, you can, the health excuse was there so they can justify it. But I just get the vibe they're really not going to hand him anything. Now, when you talk about July, the real question is if Mills is going to be ready. I would think he would be. Doug kind of hinted at it a little bit during the breakfast. So I would think he'd be ready. So I would say Mills, Maddox on the outside, and LeBlanc on nickel, I think is what I would go with. What about you?
Yeah, I think that's probably going to be how it ends up being. And I'm in for surprises. Like, that's the thing. I really can't say 100%, even like a wanting thing, I want Sidney Jones to start on the outside. Don't know if that's going to happen. You know,
Do you think they'll trade any of them? That's the other wild card.
If it is, it's going to be towards the end of training camp, and honestly, I wouldn't. You know,
I wouldn't either.
If everyone is performing at a pretty good level, and even great level, then there's no reason to go and do it. Even if the organization is not too high on Sidney, he's fallen out of favor. If he shows up and plays really well, but still doesn't have the starting job for whatever reason, hold on to him. You know, like, it doesn't, unless somebody is giving it, like, all right, we'll give you a first round pick for him or whatever. There's always something that you'll say yes to. But
Here's a question too. So let's say, I think it's safe to probably assume Darby will not be ready to start a training camp.
Yeah,
yeah, right. And so the last time we recorded this podcast, the Darby deal was still viewed as 1 year, 8.5. Now that's really been taken down kind of to more like, you know, 1 year, like between 3 and 5. Mm-hmm. So that's not exactly throw him in there no matter what money. But I don't think Darby would have come back here if he wasn't essentially assured that he was going to start, right? Because it's a 1 year prove it deal and you can't prove yourself from the bench. Now, if he does not start week one and, you know, Sidney's out there playing well, or Rasul, or Maddox, or whatever, and Jalen's out there playing well, the cornerbacks are playing well, do you still think they just put Darby in there?
Probably. Yeah.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, because that's just, what else is the point? You know, like, let him
I think
go.
They like Darby a lot. Like, our feelings on him aside, I know you like him a little more than I do, but I think they like him a lot.
I think Jim Schwartz loves him. Loves him. And the same,
which is weird because he's not really a Jim Schwartz, Corey Undlin kind of guy. Like LeBlanc, Mills, Maddox, like, they're more their guys. So they must see something in Darby. But I think he would go back out there.
I think he's got the same kind of mentality that Mills and the rest do. Like, it's, you know,
well,
he's not,
he hates to tackle.
Oh yeah, he's not physical, but it's not the fact of his makeup speed, the pass breakups, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I know it doesn't matter because everybody. That's the other thing too. And I'm gonna switch to that the rules for a second because everybody was the one thing that I wanted to pass, which is still didn't, is the 4th and 15 rule. You know, and I think it was they had labeled it as only in the fourth quarter to eliminate onside kicks. You can do it once. You'll place the ball on the 35. It'll be 4th and 15, and you go get a shot. Now, why isn't that's the Greg Schiano rule, by the way, and it's been proposed forever. Like, since whenever he was the coach of Tampa Bay, that has been a reoccurring theme forever. And the reason why they won't do it is because it's going to take away jobs from special teamers and eliminate kickoffs and do all that other stuff. But it'll make the game a lot more entertaining. Now, I have no problem if you do it 4th and 15 from the 20 either. But that is, I'm really mad that nobody wants that rule and everybody thinks it's dumb. And it's like, oh, man, he wouldn't. But, you know, the success rate. And then everybody goes, well, be careful what you wish for because the Jim Schwartz sticks defense. Like, guys, it was two fucking plays in the whole season where it was 4th and 15. Relax. I know it's the same joke over and over again. But why is that the only thing you think why they wouldn't pass that rule is because it'll take away from special teamers? The fact that you can get have a make it and take it rule in football would be highly entertaining, and I hate the onside kick. So I don't know. Do you think that's the only holdup?
Well, I go back to what I said at the beginning of the podcast, like, the Eagles are a very forward thinking organization. They're very open to change and things that make sense. That's just not the case with other NFL owners. So it does not surprise me that there was resistance to, you know, not putting the 4th and 15 thing in there. I just don't think owners are ready to make, I mean, that type of change. I mean, Lurie said yesterday that he's been voting for years to overhaul the replay system. And the only thing they've now accomplished is that you're allowed to challenge offensive and pass and defensive pass interference. So the NFL is just a slow moving sport when it comes to change.
Yeah.
The other thing Lurie said I thought was interesting was that if it was up to him, there would be no coin toss in overtime. It would be whoever scored more touchdowns that game gets the ball, which I thought was like an interesting kind
of
way.
Good. I like that.
So my way would be rock, paper, scissors, shoot, because I feel like that's like a skill. But I mean, I know I'm not going to.
Listen, I would gladly take a Rochambeau because you could have, like, I don't know, like, John Durenbos seemed like he would have been a good Rochambeauer. You know, and
what the fuck are you saying? Rochambeau?
That's rock, paper, scissors, baby. It's the technical term, Rochambeau.
Wow, I've never heard that.
Oh, man, there's I mean, that's a professional thing. Like, people bet on that and, like, you know.
Wow.
Yeah, it's the next wave, next to esports. It's going to be great.
Yeah, I think it would be interesting because it would be like, okay, Zach Ertz or somebody, like, you know, he's, and that's the only thing of a better example, like, Kamu Grugier-Hill.
Yes.
Pretty good linebacker. But imagine on cutdown day, you're like, but he is very good at rock, paper, scissors, shoot. And, like, he gives us value if overtime comes. Like, it was just, you know, like, just a little something edge to give yourself a better chance of making the roster.
Yeah. No, I would love that. The just like, oh, my God. Can you imagine the arguments we'd have? You knew he was going to throw scissors. You knew it.
Exactly.
Why didn't you just throw the rock? He's throwing you off.
Dak throws rock every time, and yet they still went up there. Like, it would be amazing.
Yeah, that would be really cool. I'm very much down for that. But you did mention that. And the most shocking thing to me is that 32 NFL coaches said, no, we definitely want to take a look at that. And then they amended it. And, of course, the Bengals are the only one that voted against it for whatever reason, just because, I guess. But it's opened up I don't know. People have taken it a lot of weird different ways. And congratulations to Sean Payton for finally winning something, I guess. And But, I mean, it's the right thing to do. And I just don't understand why you can't just make everything reviewable.
I agree.
You have three challenges. You can use them for literally anything you want during the game. Once they're out, they're out. And to me, at the end of and that's the way it has to be, either one way or no way, like challenge everything or don't challenge anything. And here's my hot take. We hate corrections. We actually don't really like instant replay at all because it's just not entertaining. It doesn't give us anything to talk about to get the call right. How fun was it that the Saints got screwed over? Now, we would hate it if we were the, you know, getting that called against us here in Philadelphia. We'd be on it like every 5 seconds. It would be the most, you know, talked about thing for months and months and months, and we'd probably never get over it.
But the parade in Philly would have been way bigger than the parade in New Orleans. Yeah. I'll say that.
And I like bad calls. Okay, like I just do. It's fun. It's fun to argue about. To get called an idiot. Like, what are you looking at? Like, you're even worse than the refs, or vice versa. I love the human aspect of all sports. I try to abstain it as much as possible. Yeah. Oh man, they got away with a hold. Yes. Yes. There's gamesmanship in all of that. There's gamesmanship in the NBA and trying to flop and get a call. The same way with pass interference and whatever. The only real issue I have with this is, like, it is so open to interpretation on if somebody wants to challenge something and be like, no, that really wasn't pass interference. How do you solve that? You know, blatant ones are easy, but if somebody throws it and it's like, well, he does grab his arm and it was a bang bang play and it ends up being, it's already hard for the DBs already. So, like, I don't know.
My guess is the only ones that'll be challenged will be pretty blatant ones. That's just my guess. And I mean, there'll probably be a handful this year, but I think they'll just go in and make the best decision they can, like they can with all replays.
Bill Belichick, if he's losing a football game with less than 2 minutes in the fourth quarter, and maybe there's pass interference, is going to throw that flag no matter what. Every NFL coach should, because what do you have to lose? You know, like, hey,
well, potentially a timeout.
I guess so, but I mean, like, if it's your only, you know, thing that you can kind of, oh yeah, I actually didn't think about that, and I guess it's not an automatic thing. Like, it's not just sitting in your pocket. You still have to have a challenge left to do that, right? Because my interpretation was the booth can take over under 2 minutes, right? No matter what.
Like normal, like within 2 minutes, you know, like the replay can be triggered instantly.
Okay, so I'm not sure. I like that it's moving that way. I just wish that we just do it with everything and not worry about, you know, all these like little smaller details that make it more complicated. But I am sure we will find a way to bitch about it and or praise it and or kind of whatever. And the other thing that I noticed this week, and there's a lot of rumblings as it comes around now too, is people are meeting together and kind of understanding where everybody is picking, what their top prospects are, except for the Cardinals, apparently, who haven't made a decision on the number one overall pick and only a couple of weeks away from the draft. No big deal from that. I saw that, you know, you had mentioned on our last podcast that, hey, I wouldn't be surprised if the Eagles tried to move up and go get a D-line guy. And you had an article today on 94WIP.com/GoBirds suggesting a few players too, which I'll have you break down as well. And I saw Brian Baldinger mentioned something about the Eagles and the Colts basically want the same guy. And don't be surprised if they're, you know, kind of in a war or whatever. And then people in the thread mentioned Wilkins. And I go, oh, that makes sense. And he all but kind of confirmed that, like, hey, that looks like it's, you know, it's Wilkins. And I was like, okay.
Did he follow up tweet that or something?
No, it was kind of a back and forth where, like, an Eagles fan was saying, why would they draft him when they just signed Jackson? That doesn't make any sense. Then somebody went back again and said, well, you know, if you play the three technique, that's basically a starting spot no matter what because of how much they rotate. And Baldy just goes, bingo. I took that as, oh, okay, yeah. So it is, might not be him, but it's definitely probably for a D lineman. At least that's how I interpret it. Is that kind of the sense you got when you first heard it?
So what's funny is my initial reaction was Josh Jacobs, but not because I think they will do it.
Shout out to Jeff Mosier then, you know, if that's the case.
Right. Well, yeah, no, right. I know Mosier thinks they really like him. I don't think they're going to take a running back. Like today, not at all, but I mean, I don't think they're going to take a running back at 25. This week, when Howie was asked about why he hasn't signed a running back yet. And, you know, he kind of gave the whole Aaron Rodgers, like, relax, we have
sure.
a lot of time, that
sure.
kind of thing. But one of the first things he said was, you know, when it comes to free agency, you want to stick to your philosophy and, like, what you really believe as an organization. And that was Malik Jackson. It was DeSean Jackson. It was playmakers, right? It was the line. It was bringing back Vinnie Curry. It was bringing back Brandon Graham. They just don't value the running back position. So my initial reaction that was Josh Jacobs, I guess, was wrong. It seems like he's since confirmed with a defensive lineman. And that's what I think they're going to do. I think they're going to take a defensive lineman at 25, or I think they're going to move up. And one thing, too, I don't think enough Eagles fans realize, like, the Eagles can get up far based off of the picks that they have. Mm-hmm. They're willing to move both of those second rounders, which wouldn't can. Well, I guess I would say would surprise me at this point, because Howie and Lurie talked a lot about how they want to add more draft picks. But they have a lot of draft capital to move up if they want. Like, they can easily get into the top 15. So I think it's a trade up is very possible. And again, like, that's what I've heard. I've heard they're interested in trading up. So I think that's, you know, who knows what's going to happen on draft night. But I think Wilkins makes a lot of sense for them.
And that's why you had mentioned, too, you know, Quinnen Williams, you know, don't be too surprised. You know, if that's their guy and they want to invest more in that and get younger and get, you know, 25, 53, and 57, that'll get you up there.
The question is how far he would have to drop a little. Like, he would have to get to, like,
7, 8, 9, 10, somewhere around there.
Yeah, something like that. And again, if quarterbacks go up there, it could happen. So I wouldn't rule it out. But, you know, they have the capital to do it for sure.
Montez Sweat is another name, too. And they met with him officially, according to the NFL Network. And of course, you know, he was the star of the combine, and people had a lot of questions on what he is, and it's still the debate is still raging on. But I would be very happy with that. Wilkins, we already mentioned. Then you mentioned Cody Ford, too, and, you know, Oklahoma tackle bias at that point. But I really think everybody now, after watching him for a while and understanding why he's so high, he really looks like a guard to me, because I didn't really see him as moving over to left tackle. I don't even think he's played a snap over there, unless I have that wrong. You guys can correct me on that or not. But I mean, Cody Ford being like a solidified huge guard, and then you know, based on really on Sale Malu's deal. You know, I mean, that could easily turn into a backup role, backup, you know, starter role for him. So that is fine with me, too. I like all the guys that you have there. I think it's trenches, and that's, and the running back thing is, as much as I am 100%, you need a guy. We all know that. We're all frustrated by it. And yes, that's going to happen there. Like, Howie's right. And on top of that, like, signing a guy like Coleman or signing C.J. Anderson, who for some reason people are like dying to go get right now.
Yeah, is really what it's come to.
Is not going to really help your football team as much as we think it is. It's a name. It's somebody that we've seen on Sundays. The Rams offensive line did a spectacular job for both him and Todd Gurley, and I'm not taking away C.J.'s performance either. He had a really great year. But his track record speaks for itself. Coleman's track record speaks for itself. Don't go get another broken piece. You and I have both been on the same page, like, yeah, if you want to do Jordan Howard, or if you want to do Duke, that's fine. Like, that to me is a better situation than signing a guy, potentially losing out on maybe a fourth round pick, a comp pick from Jordan Hicks and or the rest. Like, I don't think any of those things or running backs are worth it when you put it in that context either. Like, if I sign this guy, am I possibly also losing out on a fourth rounder or a fifth rounder or a third rounder or however the formula kind of breaks down? And yeah, I mean, especially then it makes it even easier to just say, like, let's just wait for the draft. And honestly, that's what they're going to do. They're not going to select a running back until it's day three again, and they might take two of them. That's my early impression on this. And wait and see. You know, there, unless you are, and there isn't really in this draft class, the I am the number one running back type of guy, because everybody's all over the place, then just wait. You just have to wait, and it sucks. But I would rather have a Sweat, a Ford, a Wilkins to entrench that line. And listen, Fletcher Cox is not getting any younger either, and he's making a lot of money. And the first year that they could attempt, which they won't, but I'm just saying contractual-wise, is next year, and you have to start building that way, and it's the most important position. So yeah, just relax on running backs and make sure that Carson Wentz throws a shitload of touchdowns to everybody.
And the one line they clearly had ready to go for this weekend was the three running backs, into the Super Bowl were added after the draft line. Like, Doug said it, Howie said it, I think Lurie even said it. Like, they were like, they found that out, and they were like, okay, this is our talking point. But yeah, no, I agree with everything you said. Like, if you can, again, Corey Clement, right, take him for example. If Corey Clement had been with another team and it had the game he had in the Super Bowl and was a free agent now, Eagles fans would be like, why aren't you signing Corey Clement, right? So I think there's just a little bit of bias when it comes to just new guys because you're just sick of the guys you kind of have. But look, if they wanted Mark Ingram, they would have Mark Ingram. He only made $5 million a year. They have $25 million a year. If they wanted Tevin Coleman, they'd have Tevin Coleman. Now, they clearly just valued those guys at lesser money than they got paid. Because if you're either of those guys, you would rather come to Philadelphia, right? Better offense, all those things, better quarterback. So, yeah, I think they don't value it. Like, I was down for signing Le'Veon Bell because Le'Veon Bell is a difference maker. I would pay money for Le'Veon Bell. You're not going to get a difference maker at this point at running back unless you buy low on a guy like Jordan Howard and he bounces back, or you find a diamond in the rough in the draft. But they're never going to invest big resources in running back. They're just not.
Yeah, and there is more than just the first round. And if they don't take a running back or a linebacker, which they're not going to, that's okay. You know, like, just it's
a smart thing to do.
Yes, yes. It's just how the league is. And
Because the other thing, so Howie said this weekend, I keep saying this weekend, but Howie said this past week that when it comes to signing Carson to a big deal, that means they're going to have young players, and they're going to have guys, essentially, he didn't say this, but this is reading between the lines, that are at bargain prices. And if you take a guy, a running back at 25, he will be not paid as amongst like the top five running backs, but he will be a well-paid running back for that spot because running backs don't make a lot of money. If you find a defensive tackle at 25, if you find a defensive end at 25, if you find a cornerback at 25 and that player turns into a stud, you're talking about a savings in for 3 or 4 years of like $30 million versus what they'd be worth on the open market. So you have to take that into consideration too, that if you're going to sign Carson this big deal, you need value on your roster. And the Eagles are not going to get that by taking a running back at 25.
No, they're not. And we'll just have to kind of wait and see what their plan is. And I even though it was a line, I still wouldn't rule it out in the middle of the year if nothing is happening and they don't need to go find the next JJ. And honestly, those talks are still going on, too. And if that's what you have to do for right now, then fine. You know, I mean, it did work. I mean, you needed LeGarrette Blount, but whatever. I mean, that's going to be
at the end of the day, it's just going to matter what Carson does.
Exactly.
If Carson plays like he's capable, it will not matter at all who's that running back.
That's right.
It comes down to they need a running back, then you got way worse news on your hands because that means Carson's not playing well.
Yes. Also, just I absolutely love this, by the way. I love that players are kind of taking their own reins on what does and does not get out and information or whatever. And Antonio Brown recording his own conversation for his new podcast, apparently, of the decision on what he thought of Drew Rosenhaus, that is, was going to happen and where he was going to end up. And of course, the Eagles are in the discussion. And I mean, Jesus, I mean, two firsts, he says, two firsts to get into discussion. And I don't know, to get into the lead at some point. And then I think I heard Adam Schefter on NFL Live or somewhere saying the Eagles didn't, you know, they made their calls, but their interest wasn't as heavy. And man, like, it's amazing to hear Antonio Brown going back and forth and being like, yeah, the Bills, don't even worry about it. Washington was in the mix too. And just, it was a nice behind the curtain of like, yeah, this is how those discussions go. And to me, Elliot, like the Steelers driving up the price on contenders and lowering the price for teams that they obviously knew weren't going to contend with them, I thought was pretty interesting because it sounded like the Patriots and Eagles wanted to pay more, but the Steelers weren't going to deal with that, and then they priced them out, and you land in the middle, and you're going, okay, the Raiders can give us picks. It fits with his contract. He wants to be there. It's the best quarterback situation with the rest of the group, you know, minus the Eagles and Patriots and all that, and you just decide on that.
So my takeaway from listening to the Antonio Brown Rosenhaus thing was, in addition to it being awesome, right? Like, it's awesome to hear that type of behind the scenes stuff. But was that, you know, everyone, I know Rosenhaus said it's going to take 2 months to get him, right? I know that's what he said. And when he said that, I believe that was probably true. But he ended up also saying, more importantly, the Raiders are going to trade you to the team that gives you the best package. Now, obviously, the contract
Steelers,
could do with that as well, because the team had to then be willing to give him the contract. So this whole idea, because I put out there yesterday, would you have rather given up a 3 and a 5 and 3 years, $50 million for Antonio Brown, or the 6 and 3 years, $27 million for Deshaun? And everyone said, well, it was going to take 2 1s. It wasn't going to take 2 1s. That was just at the time what it said. I believe that if the Eagles wanted Antonio Brown, the trade compensation would have been less. The issue was just the money. But overall, you mentioned Schefter saying they were just making their calls. Like, I respect Schefter more than anyone else. Follows me on Twitter. Please don't unfollow me, Schefter. But, like, I think that's a little more damage control than what Drew Rosenhaus said, what he believed was going to be private to Antonio Brown, which is, I think the Eagles were really interested. I think that they traded for Deshaun, so they were clearly looking for a receiver. And I think Howie's always going to be aggressive. He's always going to be looking to add guys. He said this past week he has no problem adding older guys because he wants instant impact. So I think they were very interested in Antonio Brown, for sure. And that's what Drew Rosenhaus said.
Yeah, and impact guys like that, too. Not like, seeing that people looked at it and it was like, oh, man, you guys made fun of the Giants for basically saying the same thing when, yeah, it's a difference between like a journeyman 31-year-old like safety that's coming in there and one of the best wide receivers in the league, if not the best
and
wide receiver.
The Eagles
the
are trying to win right now. The Giants are going to be terrible.
Yeah, and they're trying to, like, I don't know what they're doing, but this just came out too as we're recording. This is Eli Manning for the Giants QB in 2020. John Mara and Stephen Tisch didn't rule that out. So keep on.
Perfect.
Keep the hits coming. Yeah, to answer your question, I still say Deshaun because of. And
I think that would probably lean Deshaun too, I guess, just because of the lesser trade compensation and the money and all that.
Yeah.
But I definitely think it's a discussion.
Oh, it is. I mean, if it is just that, like if they could have gotten him for a third and the fifth, then I'd probably lean Antonio Brown. I mean, you know,
right.
But I still don't buy that's what it would have cost the Eagles. I think it would have been at least a second rounder, you know, for that particular team. And then they probably couldn't find anything to move on from that. It makes sense to me. You don't give away your best player or one of your best players to a Super Bowl contender to then go win the Super Bowl. Like, that's just not smart either, because
yeah,
you're going to feature.
They were never going to get 2 first-round picks.
Not 2 first, but I'm just...
a 5.
No,
so like,
but I'm saying, even just like you said, even if that price came down, like, okay, not 2 firsts, a first, and Howie goes, no, I'm not. We're still not doing that. We got to pay this guy. And they go, okay, a second and a fourth and a whatever and a kicker. And they're like, no, we still can't do that. Like, if it was just, we're already paying the freight on that. We're not going to give up the draft capital because there are a lot of other things. Just like you said right now, what if you want to turn that into Wilkins? What if you want to turn that into Williams, Ford, et cetera, et cetera? That's more of an investment in ammo to go get one of those guys that you're probably going to have for 5 years, hopefully more. And, you know, you got to pay them at the end of the day, too. So, I that's why I say Deshaun, and I'm fine with it, and hopefully Carson and this ragtag bunch is fine with it too, because I will just say this in closing. This made me, and it's probably because it was calculated, just like you were saying, Elliot, that I feel so much confidence about Carson Wentz's year coming up. And more excitement, honestly, more than anything. And it's caused me to go back again just to not remind myself, but to make sure, like, that is what we saw. And that wasn't a fluke and that wasn't anything. And to remind myself of how good Carson Wentz is and how good, actually, his deep ball is. And I don't understand that myth that's just been all of a sudden worked itself right back into the conversation with, you know, things that Carson Wentz can't do. But to me, it made me feel a lot more confident in Carson and what they're going to do, because they all felt optimistic about his back and whatever, how he threw in the HIPAA law thing, and that's a whole other different topic. But I came away feeling really good about where they're at and what they're planning on hopefully doing in the draft here.
Their messaging worked on you, John, so that's good. Their mission accomplished for them. I don't feel that way you do, and I don't want to mean that I feel negative about it, but I don't have that same type of confidence you do. So we'll see. I mean, I think, again, it's a huge wild card, and you don't want a wild card at quarterback. Carson Wentz could be NFL MVP next year, or they could go 7-9. Like, it could be either or, but I just don't think you know what you're getting from Carson next year.
Well, we'll have to end
it on that.
I would just like to say, I'll place a bet. Let's see, it's 2:51 p.m., March 27th, year of our Lord, 2019. I'm going to say by August 5th that Elliott changes his mind about Carson Wentz. That's my guess.
I guarantee you I won't, because it's training camp and Sam Bradford already burned me once with training camp performances. Now, if you told me, if you would have said week three, then maybe yes, I would agree. I'm open to changing my mind quickly because, as you said, we've seen him play really well before. But I guarantee you in training camp, I will not fall off of my stance of you don't know what you're going to get from him in the regular season.
Okay, I'll even take the date off. The first time that it is 11-on-11 and Carson Wentz throws a touchdown to DeSean Jackson and it's a fucking frozen rope, you're going to change your mind. And so is everybody else.
Let me say this. I will say, I was going to tweet this morning, but I pulled back because I thought it was thirsty. But you saying that, like, I just can't wait for training camp.
Yes!
Live training camp tweets, the Ravens are coming, there's so much to talk about, Carson, like, it's going to be phenomenal.
Oh, yeah.
Very excited.
Can't believe we forgot that. It's going to be, what, the third week of training camp that the Ravens...
I don't know, I was thinking about that. I feel like they've done it the third week before, but maybe second or third. Yeah.
And, hey, guess what? The Eagles are going to play the Ravens in the preseason. So there you go with that.
There you go. There's one. It'll be in Philly.
Should be entertaining. It's actually, I'm really looking forward to, not because of the Eagles stuff, but get my first taste of up close and personal Lamar Jackson. So that's going to be a lot of fun, too.
Yeah, you're right. That'll be good.
That'll do it. Elliot, stay safe. Stay sober. Kind of sober. And we'll see you back on Saturday. We're actually going to be at the Mayfair Business District, our live remote, 1 to 3. John Rich will be there, too. I think there's an actual opportunity I can run the 40 there, because it's a combine for kids. So if you have kids, come out. Jay Feely's going to be there as well.
Run the 40.
Yeah, I will definitely do that if they have that available.
Can I drop my taco tick?
Oh, yes. Oh, God, I forgot. And is it because you're out there?
Because I'm out here.
Yeah, hit me with it.
All right, ready?
Ready.
Hard shell tacos are not tacos. They're just a worse version of nachos.
I don't even know where to begin. First of all,
right?
I'm a proponent of hard tacos and soft. I like them both. I mean, I'm a big fan of the flour and the corn tortillas. I also do a lot of weird shit with mine, and people get upset about it. But I don't think that's right at all. Just worse
hard
nachos.
Hard shell tacos break right away. You can't really enjoy what's in them. You basically just end up picking the stuff up with the broken taco shell, which is very similar to nachos. Soft shell tacos.
How do you eat tacos that they break like that all the time? Or what shells are you using? First of all,
maybe shitty ones. But yeah, whatever shell I'm using, I can tell you break pretty quickly.
If you're just in a pinch and you want to go to the store, you got to get the standing stuff taco shells where it's got the wide base. That's like, so you can fit everything in.
I think it would still break.
It's a little thick. No, they still, I mean, of course they're going to break. It's just what happens, but it stays together. It doesn't fall apart like it's like 70 pieces of taco shell on your plate. It's not how it should be. If you want to accuse me of being a nacho sandwich lover, I'm all about it. I mean, it stays together a lot better. So, all right. You can... You can tweet Elliot Shore Parks at James Seltzer for all your complaints. And actually, my complaints, too. It's just at James Seltzer. We appreciate everyone tuning in to Go Birds 61. For Elliot Shore Parks down at the owners' meetings, I'm John Bartud here in Philadelphia. And thank you for listening right here on radio.com and Sports Radio 94 WIP. Go Birds.